to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another edition today. Also glad everybody could join us. We are enjoying a good year, I think, on the radio show. We're getting a lot of good response from folks. We appreciate that. Today, we have a really interesting guest and a really interesting topic, and I guess the best way to describe my guest today is that he is the ever-elusive species known as the Trigstar participant becomes surveyor. We get a lot of feedback on our Trigstar program, both good and not so good, and most of the not so good is based on the fact that apparently nowhere in the history of mankind has any Trigstar participant ever become a licensed land surveyor, and we know that's not true, and today we have proof. So with that, I will welcome Mike Brown to the show. Welcome, Mike.
Howdy.
Mike is joining us from Texas. I assume you're in Fort Worth today.
Yes, sir.
And we're going to have a conversation not only about Trigstar, but really about Mike's journey, I think. Your journey didn't exactly start with Trigstar, but I guess it, in a sense it did, because, I'll let you tell that story. But before I do, introduce yourself to the folks a little bit and let everybody know a little bit about you.
All right. Well, I'm a land surveyor here in Texas. I'm licensed in 10 states. I'm 34 years old, graduated from Texas A&M in Corpus Christi, father of three kids. That's me in a nutshell.
Well, that's a pretty big resume, actually. Texas is a big state, and three kids is always, I don't know if challenge is the right word, a blessing is probably a better word.
Absolutely.
And I think all of our listeners, or most of our listeners, can relate to that. And you being 34 years old, that puts you pretty close to the middle of the age group for surveyors, I guess, actually the lower end, not the middle, because the average age is almost twice your age, not quite twice your age, I guess.
Certainly.
But so to get the show started, since I introduced it the way I did, maybe you could tell the audience about your experience when you were in high school. Was that in Fort Worth also?
That was over in a little town called Gatesville, Texas. About the only reason anybody would know it, it's Fort Hood, or there's a women's prison there. That's about its only claim to fame right now. But yeah, so I'm in high school, 1997-98. I graduated in 98. And I had an interest in, I was always good at math, always knew I was going to do something with that. And just like anybody who's good at math, they think engineering's about the only way. And I looked into, you know, aerospace engineering, aeronautical engineering. That sounds cool. It's always liked fast cars and fast airplanes, and just like any guy. And I guess it was my senior year, we had to write some kind of paper about what kind of profession we'd want to do and research it. I wrote mine on civil engineering. And, of course, the whole time I'm writing this paper, I really didn't understand what the word infrastructure meant. And towards the end of it, I had a slight clue of what it was. But it just never seemed quite super interesting to me. But, so I was going to, my plan was to go to school for a year at a junior college, get some basics under the way while I was living at home. And towards the end of my senior year, in my calculus class, our teacher gave us this little assignment. It was a little trigonometry test, and it reminded me. Like, we took this test, and it was fun. It was fun to use this math. Math has always been that class that I never knew when I would ever use that in my life. And trigonometry was that first that first kind of math that I was like, okay, this is something that I could see a use for in daily life, you know, measuring stuff. That's neat. And so it turns out this was just an extra assignment that the teacher gave us for, we had kind of pretty much finished up our workload for that 6 weeks or even the year, I think. And it turns out this test was a TrickStar sample test. And the very last question was a difficult question. You had to work around backwards to get the answer. And she said, hey, if y'all want to know how to do that last question, there are some surveyors, Ron Carroll out of Temple, Texas, and another guy who recently passed away, I forgot his name, but they came by and explained the last question, and you know, a lot of light bulbs went off when they explained it. It was just real, real interesting to me. My parents had recently had their house surveyed and mentioned that, man, Mike, this survey was expensive. Maybe you should go into that profession. It seems like they do very little work and get paid a lot of money. And so I got to asking around about it, and I took the TrickStar test, and I had one of the fastest times in the state from what I was told. But the last question, they had a 90-degree angle, and they gave you enough information and there was a line that bisected it. They gave you enough information to determine the smaller angle, and you had to subtract that from 90 to get the bigger angle. And I, in my rush, I forgot to subtract that from 90. So I got did everything right on the last question, but I just missed a step, and so I didn't get the perfect score with the great time. But the surveyor called me up and said, Mike, you did pretty doggone good on this test. So have you ever thought about being a surveyor? And so I got to talking with him about it, and he goes, well, you know, you have any plans this summer? Yeah. What do you want to do? And I said, well, I don't have any jobs lined out. That might be a good idea to go into see what surveying's like. Well, I interviewed with the Ron Carroll there in Temple, and he was kind of busy and but didn't have a spot for me. But he recommended Jerry Goodson in Lampasas, Texas, which you know, at the time I didn't know his importance in the role and of surveying, but I just knew he was a old country boy surveyor, and you know, learned a little bit about surveying while I worked for him, so I started working for him that summer. And he kept me on all summer, and then when school started up in the fall semester, my classes were all in the mornings, and I had my afternoon spree. And he asked me, he says, hey, can you stay on and just work the afternoons with me? And so I worked for Jerry Goodson for a year before I moved off to Corpus Christi to finish up my school. Jerry was a great guy. It was a unique opportunity to be able to survey this land that a lot of large tracts of land and finding original corners. I remember one of my probably one of the biggest hooks I ever was able to get in surveying is where we're out looking for a corner. It's supposed to be a set stone, and we're looking all around, and there's some new fence, and there's nothing around, but there's a pile of rocks over maybe 20, 30 feet from the fence, and I see these two rocks. Just something about these two rocks just look unique. And I walk over to them, and I grab them both, and I put them together, and I, you know, twist it about 90 degrees, and all of a sudden they slide together just right, and there's a letter C carved in this rock, and just, oh, that was so cool. And then, sure enough, I look over, like, there still look like there's a piece, and sure enough, another 50 feet away, there's this other rock that just looked unique. Grabbed it, and sure enough, these three pieces made this 3 foot long set stone with a C carved in it. And that was that point where I was like, all right, this is cool. This is the investigation and the finding of the stuff that was set I think we dated that set stone to like 1848. And that's fun. That's just really fun and neat. And so went off to college. Actually got married the summer of 1999 as a 19-year-old to my wife now of 15 years. And we went off to college at Corpus Christi, started with the survey program. It was pretty new at that time. I think there was only one or two people that had graduated even from there. And looking back, I think I was in like the first 30 or 40 people that graduated from the program with Dr. Jeffress and Peter Mensa and Stacy Lyle, Dr. Loon, and got to work with all those people. And kind of a funny story, my experience with Dr. Loon wasn't we conflicted. Let's just put it at that. And there was a class that my senior year, one class left, and I was still a kid. I don't blame him for any of this, but he failed me. And a group that small, it was. You know, a lot of these classes are only offered once a year. And I was about to graduate, except for this one class that I had to wait another year to retake this test or this class. And fortunately, you know, I had a good enough rapport with the school, and they were able to make an exception and find a class that I could take instead of that class. And that's where I met Stacy Lyle, who that was his first class to teach at this college, was this class for me and two or three other guys that had failed the same class and were all seniors fixing to graduate, that they created this class for, and got to do some some good research. And
Mike, we're a few seconds away from the end of our first break, and
all right.
Hate to interrupt your story. We'll pick it up when we come back. But this is a great interview, so we'll be right back in a couple minutes.
All attention, right. Surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's schonstedt.com.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back with our guest Mike Brown today, and Mike's been telling us his story. I want to get you to finish that story about Corpus, but going as you were talking, a few things struck me. One was you said you got into surveying for the money. I don't hear that too often. But I think we'll, as we've talked further today, people will understand what you mean by that, because you can make money surveying if you do the right things. Another was that I was going to ask you later in the show about ideas for marketing Trigstar as someone who participated in it, and I do want to talk about that. But one of the things you said was a great testimony that we all as surveyors need to listen to, and you said the surveyor contacted you after he saw your results. I'm not sure we're doing a lot of that, but that would be something we as a profession could do that would expand Trigstar and keep kids interested in it, rather than say, okay, here's a test, take it, hope you like surveying, see ya. But that follow-up was really important. So I'm not sure who the surveyor was who contacted you, but we're appreciative for it, whoever it was.
Certainly. And you know, that's a great point. I probably would not have been a surveyor if he hadn't contacted me and asked me what I was going to do after college, and he kind of lined up some interviews for me at a couple different survey firms to work at and to experience it. And obviously, you know, working with Jerry Goodson and that type of surveying was really neat and fun. And
I, you know, I think your path, and of course you were able to do that work right away out of school and didn't really have to interrupt your path toward school, the way I understand it. You still were able to start your classes the next fall after high school. But having that experience, I think, is always important, and I think it does drive a lot of people and get them excited. As you were talking about finding the stone and the pieces of the stone and put them together, what came to my mind was the aha moment. You know, that moment at which you say, wow, this is really cool. This is something I want to do. And the part of it that you just explained was always the most important part to me, was solving those puzzles, you know, finding the right pieces and helping people solve the puzzles. So I think that's a critical element, too, in getting people interested, and perhaps even could be good advice for us as we present this to students who are going to participate, or we hope will participate, is that, you know, these are the kind of exhilarating moments that we get to be involved in, and some people will attach to that, and obviously others won't.
Certainly. Well, and I feel that, you know, if all Jerry Goodson ever did was, you know, stake a center line of pipeline all day, I probably wouldn't be as interested in the profession.
Right, and I don't know if this job you were working on was one of those, but one of the things I guess a lot of our listeners don't know about is that in Texas, there, and I'm going to say this title wrong, but there's something called something similar to a state lands surveyor or something like that.
Yeah, a licensed state land surveyor.
You licensed state land surveyor.
And your PS or your PLS, but in Texas you have your RPLS, which is your standard surveyor, and then your LSLS, licensed state land surveyor, which is a step above the typical land surveyor.
Yeah, it might be worth explaining to people what that difference is, because I understand a little bit about it just knowing Jerry as well as I did, but
certainly,
I don't understand all of it.
Well, probably the easiest way to explain it, I don't know if people have heard about the CFEDS program. I'd hope most have, which I cannot stress highly enough. That is probably the most important program out there. I cannot tell you how much I've learned from that program just going to these other states and have gone through the CFEDS program. It's, you know, the work that we've got from it has been negligible, but the knowledge is priceless. And the LSLS program in Texas is a very similar additional license to a CFEDS where you take it to the next step where you're surveying for the state of Texas. And in Texas, we have vacancies and we have overlaps, unlike public land states. Just like many meets and bounds states, I'm not super familiar with the Northeast meets and bounds states, but I know we have plenty of vacancies and you know, just like anywhere, you've got these laws that have gone into effect because of, you know, these court cases where somebody, you know, is said to go 1,000 veras is our unit of measurement and the original unit of measurement in Texas. It went to 1,000 veras to the river, and, well, 1,000 veras doesn't get you to the river, so which holds the river or the 1,000 veras? And, you know, the Stafford versus King made that rule, and so you really understand these original survey grants a whole lot better to be an LSLS, and you have to be an LSLS in order to actually determine these vacancies and these overlaps for the state.
So when the state hires an LSLS to do this work, is it related to maybe some project they're doing, or they're just trying to make things work, or is it related to land dispute?
It's typically not the state to hire the surveyor. It's more of a property owner wanting to get a clean title, a clear title for this property, and there happens to be a vacancy there, and who owns the vacancy? Well, the state still owns the vacancy, and so surveyor needs to go out there and find out how large this vacancy is, exactly where the vacancy is, and who has rights to that land, and therefore can make a claim to this vacancy and have basically first dibs to this property.
I see. So it's initiated by some action or maybe even a dispute over land or. And then I guess the vacancies get discovered through the normal research process. Is that how it comes about? Or
yes, typically.
And my understanding is that among those who hold that license, there's not a tremendous number.
Oh, no, it's in the maybe a dozen or two.
Okay. That's smaller than I thought, but
yeah,
I knew it was pretty small because
it's quite tiny.
Obviously, knowing Jerry as well as I did, for so many years, he told me about the situation, but we never really had the conversation of exactly what it was. I just knew it was something different than the normal course of work, and so that's a whole new or a whole separate examination structure. Then,
yes, it's a very very difficult test, and very very in depth from what I understand of it.
Now, is there training for that? It seems to me like I heard Jerry say maybe he did some workshops or something.
Yes, and actually that's one of my favorite workshops, and that's probably the most I've seen Jerry's outside of working for him was at this. They have two classes. One of them they call it Locating Original Corners Seminar, and then there's two of them, but they're basically the same thing where they're in two different areas, and they've recently created another one up in the Panhandle, which for those of y'all in Texas, Texas is, it's a typical, as you'd imagine, you had settlers move in, and the settlers, the ideal place for a settler to move would be on a river, and then it kind of all branched out from there. Well, some settlers were given, you know, say 1,000 acres, and some were given 640, and some were given 160. And so you have all these little piecemeal pieces all put together along these rivers where, you know, there's actually decent land. And way back, the railroads were coming in and they were wanting land in exchange for building railroads to these different towns. And so out in West Texas, they said, hey, we'll give you a whole bunch of land for putting this railroad in. And they needed to find a really quick, easy way to survey it out in West Texas so that they could give all these railroad people their land. And you know, one of the caveats there, they didn't want them to have, like, large chunks of land, so they would kind of do a checkerboard pattern. All the red squares were the railroad grants, and then they would give all the black squares to private individuals. But so, well, out in West Texas, they were going to survey it section style, PLSS style, and they even contacted, from what the story I've heard, they even contacted the BLM, says, hey, we want y'all to come over here and survey this for us. And they said, well, you know, we're kind of busy. You go ahead and you do it yourself. So they said, well, you know, we can survey it better than the way they do this sectionalized stuff. So we're going to do, instead of 36 section townships, we're going to do these blocks that maybe we'll put 48 sections in them. And I don't know why they would survey them from, you know, that southeast, and they go up every half mile and then go over and then come back. And that just seems like a big waste. Let's go kind of a little snake pattern and just set them every mile. And man, well, they really screwed up a lot of stuff out in the panhandle and West Texas. But so you run into that, and there's all these unique different areas on how everything was surveyed out and all the different possible errors in the state. And one of the classes was a class down near San Antonio, probably the most beautiful section of Texas, in my opinion, near Garner State Park in Concan, Texas. And we went out and found these old original stone mounds, and we chained Red and Compass and chained through this really rough country and looked for these stone mounds and found some neat old stuff and explained, you know, how to accurately calculate these lines and showed where these overlaps were and these vacancies were.
We're at our second break already, Michael.
All right.
We've got a few seconds left, and we'll come back and follow up on this. I have a few more questions about that, and I haven't forgotten what we were talking about in the first part of the show either. So
all right.
Let's take our break, and we'll come right back.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back for our third segment and the time of the show when we do our Parker Davis Quick Stakes contest every week. I will ask the guest a question. He will answer it. And the first person to email to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com will be our winner for the day. So, Mike, the question is going to be a real simple one. Who is the first surveyor you worked for?
Oh, Jerry Goodson.
Jerry Goodson is the answer we're looking for. I'm always pleased any time I'm able to use Jerry Goodson's name because he was such a great guy and such a good friend. So that's the answer for today is Jerry Goodson. Thanks, Mike, for participating in that. I know we want to get on to a couple more topics, and I didn't know if you wanted to follow up when you were finishing school, and I know you spent some time doing other things, obviously, before you got to licensure, and you may want to talk about that a little bit. The one question I had, I think I know the answer to it, though. On these workshops you were talking about that you attended or that surveyors can attend with the licensed or the state licensed surveyors, are those the things that Jerry and Ben Thompson worked on a lot?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
That's what I thought. I know Ben pretty well, too, and I was pretty sure the answer was yes, but I just want to make sure. Yeah. So a couple things we want to talk about. Obviously, TrigStar is important. Mm-hmm. And recruiting young surveyors, I think you and I talked about the fact that NSPS has started a young surveyors program, which you qualify for, by the way, since you're under 35. But it's just beginning to take off. But with your experiences and the path you have taken from high school, taking TrigStar, having somebody call you, working for Jerry, going to college, eventually getting your business going, which we also want to talk about. What are your thoughts about how do we reach out to that group that we want to bring in?
Certainly. Well, and I think I've always said that I think surveying is not for everybody, but it's for a whole lot more people than know about it. There's just not enough people that know about it. I think just the sheer numbers. If you can visit with schools, if you can visit with kids, if you can invite your cousin, your nephew, or your next door neighbor to get a summer job at a survey office, that I think just the sheer odds would be there for these kids to become surveyors. One thing that I've found in my years of surveying and being that young college educated surveyor, I'll be honest, I've run into plenty of resistance from older surveyors that are kind of stuck in their ways about the profession and think that, you know, experience only is the only way to become a surveyor and you don't need a college education and because that's the way they learned, and I don't take anything away from that, but there's been some really cynical views of the profession and negative feelings towards the college-educated surveyor.
Yeah, I often hear people say they hired somebody who'd come out of school and they didn't really know how to do anything that, you know, just the normal course of work every day. And what's important about that is that college education wasn't preparing you to do those things. It was preparing you to learn all the things you're going to need to know down the way, new technologies, all those kind of things, and prepare yourself. You're still going to have some training on the job, so to speak, to do day-to-day
Certainly.
Activities.
Well, and that's you look at civil engineers or any kind of degree. You know, you get out of school and you don't expect these kids to know everything,
right?
They know a lot, but they were given that foundation of knowledge, not the all of the knowledge.
Yeah, and I think that's such an important thing to remember is that word foundation. It's that's true no matter what you're doing. I'm not sure there's anybody who graduates from any program in college ready to be a professional the day they walk out the door.
Exactly, exactly. And I still don't consider myself a good surveyor. I think that there's, I still have 20 or 30 years before I get to a level that I could even think to compare myself to a Jerry Goodson or a Ben Thompson or Gary Jeffress, that you know, these people that I idolize as being good surveyors or great surveyors. You know, I still to this day I make mistakes and I learn stuff sometimes the hard way.
Yeah, and we all do. There's no question about that. But you know, I've always seen the educational side of things as just a way to get a broader exposure to a lot of the things you're going to have to deal with than you may get just simply going to work for somebody and working in a specific part of the country and doing maybe one thing. A lot of times our smaller survey companies, or at least years ago, were tied to doing basically one thing and not expanding. And you mentioned, working oil fields and that kind of thing. And that never crossed my mind growing up and becoming a surveyor in southwestern Virginia.
But
even if it had been available without school, it would have been harder to prepare for it, I think.
Absolutely. I couldn't speak highly enough about the program there at A&M Corpus Christi. They took extra steps to ensure our success, and you know, I wouldn't be where I am without all of them. Speaking of that, so my last semester, this class that I had to take with Stacy Lyle is his first class. Well, it turns out, you know, in that class, he asked us all, you know, we're all about to graduate, and what do we want to do for a living after we graduate? You know, what kind of place we want to work for? And, you know, a couple of the guys there from Houston, and they, you know, they planned on going back and work at whatever place they worked at Houston. And I told them that I'd always liked this area, north central Texas, Granbury and Glen Rose area, very, very pretty area of Texas, and I always wanted to move to that area and maybe get a job. And he goes, well, you know, my in-laws live up in Granbury, and I can go talk to the local surveyor and see if anybody's looking to hire somebody like you. And sure enough, he got me my first interview out of college and my first job out of college also. I'd interviewed over Christmas break and started working for him when I graduated in May. So definitely plenty of that. And, you know, the what I wanted to do was wanted to kind of work at a little small mom-and-pop type place. And, you know, we worked for a company here in Granbury, and it was a great place to work, but I really wanted something more, and ended up, one of the guys that I had got hired as my rodman, he had went on and become a draftsman, and then he had left the company and started working for this other company. I gave him a call, and sure enough, this company that he's working at is the place I'm working now and have been working for the last nearly 10 years in the oil field. And this company, Topographic, that I'm working for has given me the opportunity to look at these other states and edge further myself in education, and just at a time in my life that, you know, I was about to turn 30, and I kind of didn't know what was left. You know, I had my license when I was 25, 26 years old. And, you know, and I saw I'd maxed out at 25 years old, 26 years old, as far as licensure goes. And you know, the rest was just cruise control. And I wasn't ready to be maxed out. And, you know, so they had an opportunity. We had turned down a lot of work to survey in New Mexico. And they asked me, they said, well, do you think you can get licensed there? And, you know, looking at New Mexico there with Dr. Frank is very, very picky about, you know, they want to make sure that you have a 40-degree in surveying. And Dr. Frank and Dr. Jeffress both are, you know, are friends, and they made sure to write that so that each program would be compatible with each other, being New Mexico and Texas are next to each other. And so I went and got my license in New Mexico. That was my first out-of-state license, and sat on that for a little while. And then during the recession, you know, we were looking for stuff. You know, oil and gas slowed down, everything slowed down, and we were, you know, had an opportunity to do some work. You know, a client said, "Hey, can you survey in Colorado?" And I said, "No, we can't. We don't have anybody licensed there." "Oh, can you survey over here?" "No, we don't have anybody licensed there." And so that kind of snowballed. "Hey, Mike, go do that." I remember in the same week I got my Arizona and Utah license. And then, you know, over the course of a year, I had 5 or 6 licenses.
And I think one of the points you just made was without having gone through that degree process, that wouldn't have been possible in some areas and probably more difficult.
Absolutely.
In others, if you hadn't done that. So, as you were talking there, another thought came to me, and I think for our young surveyor group, and there, we've got some really good, talented young people in it, but I think having folks like you and some of those folks that are involved already, particularly you're kind of on the upper end of what they're calling the young surveyors, although as I explained to you the other day, young to me is anybody under 50, but having folks like you talk to them the way you're talking to us here on the show today, I think is really important, because the young people are obviously much more likely to listen to what you have to say than they are the old gray hairs like me and other people. But I've made a note here as we've been having this conversation about some ideas to talk with our young surveyors group about, and want to get you connected with that group and help to create some ways to develop those ways to reach out in the manners that you've spoken about, not only from the, you know, the Trigstar perspective, but just testimonials like you're talking about here. And I think those are the kind of things that will resonate with the next group. So maybe we're at our last break, so let's do that and come back, and maybe we can follow up a little bit, and there's a couple more things we want to talk about.
Excellent.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of 2 instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on 2 locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's SCHONSTEDT.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
And here's something new from Schonstadt. Did you know that Schonstadt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstadt.com. That's SCHONSTEDT.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com. The pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back for our last segment today with Mike Brown, surveyor in Texas, not a Texas surveyor only, but located in Texas. And we were talking about the whole young surveyor thing, and As I mentioned during the break, this idea of helping our young surveyor group engage more of us older folks to help do the task as well, but certainly to have more of our young surveyors actually having testimonials similar to the ones that you've talked about today, because I think if a young person were to listen to your path and the experiences you've had, that I think we would help to get them more interested in participating. And one of the ways to start that's right with TrigStar. And, you know, we have a Boy Scouts program, which is another way to reach some kids. You don't reach a tremendous number that way routinely. We do at the jamborees when they come around. But
certainly.
I think those are all great ideas. And I know there's a couple more things you wanted to talk about, so I want to give you time to do that. One of the things you wanted to mention was the whole future of GPS.
Yes, yeah, that's what's really got me excited here, and really stirring my brain on what we can do to embrace this and not be left behind. One of these experts that I visited with at a conference, I think it was in Arizona that I went to, and we talked about where GPS is going, and it's going to be not long where the GPS in our cell phones are going to be centimeter accuracy, and it's going to be anybody with a $2 GPS chip that in a phone that can be as accurate as what we're spending $50,000 on, and it's with that it's exciting and scary all at the same time to think that these property corners can be shot in with accuracy by just about anybody. And with information in these GIS programs, I know that the BLM has a great database of all these geographic points. And it's just something that we all need to be thinking of, what's the future of GPS and what can we do to prepare ourselves. And the thing that I'm really try to focus my CEUs on and everything is geodesy type work. The understanding these different coordinate systems and not just saying, okay, well, I know that my CAD says NAT 83, Texas North Central, and U.S. foot, and my GPS says NAT 83, Texas North Central, U.S. foot, and as long as they're the same, I should be good. And there's so much more to that I feel like I could really learn more of and really help be prepared when everybody can be using centimeter accurate GPS.
Yeah, I've said on the show so many times people get tired of hearing me say it, I think. But my thought is that one of the future avenues for surveyors is to help people understand that precise measurement with your wristwatch or whatever it is you're carrying around to centimeter accuracy doesn't necessarily mean, or I should say centimeter precision, doesn't necessarily mean that what you're setting is in the right place according to the evidence.
Certainly.
And I see that as a big avenue for surveyors. We just have to be really careful about how we spread that message and not get thrown off track by being considered preachy the way we do sometimes. But just to help people understand that, yeah, we've got all this great equipment, and it's fun to use, and we really, as you said, we need to know how to use it and understand what the underpinnings are, all the geodetic underpinnings and the coordinate systems and that kind of thing. But when it comes to setting something like a property corner and defining where people's property boundaries are, there's a lot more that goes into it than just that number. And that's where I think the surveyor has a great challenge ahead of us, is to make sure that we help people grasp that concept without doing it in a way where they just dismiss us as being self-protectionist.
Yes. Yes. And that's, you know, that's a good point with the self-protectionist, the a lot of surveyors I've noticed are really scared of change. And I'll be honest, when I first started working for this company, you know, we made a change from, you know, CAD 2004 to 2007. And I'm thinking to myself, why do I need to make this change? This is 2004 was fine. Why do we need to do this? We can save that money. And I went, it was a 3 or 4 years ago, I went over to a surveyor's office that was still running R12. And I realized that I would be that same guy if I didn't embrace this change. And, you know, he has to have a separate program so that he can downgrade any CAD files that he gets from anybody to so that he can run it in his R12. And we get so, it's so easy to get stuck in that, that single way and the way you know how to do it. And, a friend of mine told me a joke once, as, this lady cut off about 2 inches of the ham, stuck in the oven to cook it for Christmas. The husband asked, why do you do that? And I said, well, I don't know. I didn't think it was weird. My mom always did that. Calls mom up. Hey, mom, why'd you always do that? I don't know. My mom always did that. Calls grandma up. Mom, grandma, why'd you cut 2 inches off the ham? It goes, well, when you were young, our oven was only so big, so you had to cut off 2 inches so it fit in the oven. And so just because of the way we're doing things, doesn't mean it's, you got to keep doing it that way.
And I think you're right that there's always some amount of fear in moving ahead to whatever's next and embracing it. And honestly, the other thing we talked about earlier today that you covered so well in terms of educational background, I think that helps a lot for people not to have as much fear, because you feel like you have the tools to make the adjustment, where sometimes without it, you don't have those tools.
Certainly.
So, I'm trying to think what else we've left out here today. We have 4 or 5 minutes left for our session. I know you had talked about understanding geodesy, and I guess we've covered that pretty well also. But I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that.
Well, and you know, probably the last thing I want to plea to every surveyor out there, surveying is a great job. It's a great profession. We get to be on the forefront of technology, and we get to be these incredible Sherlock Holmes investigators and try to find out what happened, why it happened, and be able to make these decisions based on these clues that we've found. And if I heard some of the things before I got my license that I heard while before I had it, like, you know, these people talk about, why would you get into surveying? It doesn't pay very well. It pays great. You know, it's a good paying job, and it's, you know, there are plenty of opportunities out there. You know, on LinkedIn, which is a professional Facebook, basically, for professionals, I get, you know, weekly phone calls or emails from these people looking for surveyors. And it's not just because I have 10 licenses. You know, a lot of times they're looking for just that one particular state or something. There's jobs out there, and they're really well-paying jobs. And it really bugs me when I hear people be so pessimistic about the profession just because maybe that's the way they are in the profession. Maybe they're not at the place that they need to be. Maybe they need to find something else. Maybe they got stuck in the same old routine and need to try something different. Embrace that change.
Yeah, certainly. Fear of change is not unique to surveyors, obviously, but
certainly.
But you're right. I think sometimes we do get entrenched in the
in the things that we're doing and don't take advantage of opportunities that are available to us. Once again, our listeners will remember me having said that when you said investigators, I always like to say that surveyors are detectives, puzzle workers, and mind readers. And that goes with that investigative part. And to me, that's always been the coolest thing.
Oh, absolutely.
I've always loved that piece of the work because it requires a lot of different skills, and not only from a technical perspective, but from an intuitive perspective and just uncovering evidence until you find what you're looking for. So I would agree with you, and the don't be negative advice is a great one. We all need to be more positive when we speak about our profession, regardless of to whom we're speaking. So
absolutely.
So we've got a couple of minutes left. I do want to be sure that I thank you for being with me today, Mike. It's been fantastic. We've covered a lot of area. I've got to go down memory lane, and like I said, it's always good when I get to mention my friend Jerry Goodson's name. So, and I know that was a great experience for you working with him as well. And thank you for being one of, I don't know how many, but more than one, I'm sure, a TriGStar participant who chose surveying as a career. And the people listening need to remember that why you did that was because the surveyor came back to you, and that's an important lesson for us to learn.
Absolutely, absolutely. Don't give up on the TriGStar program. It's such a great opportunity to open up that dialogue about surveying.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and it's whatever you make it, right?
Exactly.
We can complain about it all we want, but if we're willing to work hard at it, we can make it work, and I think that's the important thing. So we got 30 seconds. Anything you want to say before we go?
30 seconds. Yeah, the college degree is important for the future. Texas A&M Corpus Christi is a great school. All the professors there are fantastic. They actually just started their own doctorate program.
I heard that from Jerry. Yeah,
and that's going to be an incredible opportunity to get more education. And I'll be honest, I was one of the people pessimistic about GIS until here recently, and realized that I was so wrong about GIS. GIS is here to stay, and it is going to be the most awesome tool for a surveyor.
And I guess that's where we have to leave it, but that's a good way to leave it. So thanks, Mike.
You betcha.
Take
care. This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.